All right. So Google's former China boss for Google, Kai-Fu Lee, who is also a well-known investor and computer scientist, he said recently, actually he said it before, but reiterated that AI will take 50% of the jobs by 2027. And I think that's why we really need to follow on the latest AI developments. And that's why we are having the AI Pod and News and this live recording at Epicenter with my co-host,
Mimi Billing. So yes, hi Athir, great to be here at Epicenter. And my name is Mimi Billing and I'm the European editor at European tech site Sifted. So I'm going to ask you, Athir, lots of questions today about what happened in AI news in May. So let's kick off, right?
Hit me.
Okay, so I'm going to start with that we've had a crazy month when it comes to the AI kind of investment scene. I mean, I don't know if you read this, but the AI market is projected to reach $184 billion in 2024. That is a lot of money. But with that in mind, I mean, the SoftBank, which is the Japanese investor, they have earmarked $9 billion annually for AI investments. And that doesn't sound that much then. but I mean, this is all kind of crazy numbers, right? But then for a few days ago, we actually saw that Elon Musk's new startup, xAI, raised a $6 billion Series B at a $24 billion valuation. And the investors was anything from like Andreessen Horowitz, who has also invested in Mistral, and Sequoia, which has also invested in OpenAI. And this is like, well, for Elon Musk, it's obviously not that much money, right? But it's like they have only like had Grok so far, the LLM. And so I'm wondering, like, what is going on here?
Well, I think we'll continue seeing this craze, AI hype, for a while. And I'm a little bit surprised, though, that there's still such huge investments in large language models, LLMs. But I think in the case of xAI, it's definitely the Elon Musk effect, because he has been extremely successful with like a chain of groundbreaking companies such as Tesla and SpaceX. And I think that's a bet on Elon, but personally, I don't see any value in large language models from an investment perspective or as like a revenue generating product. We are seeing that we're having more and more open source tools, open source large language models that are getting closer and closer to these closed source, quite expensive solutions. And eventually, what I can see is that they will all be performing the same. So the value of providing a large language model, I can't really see it. So you really need to have some kind of differentiation. So what's interesting is that OpenAI was basically the first product that reached to the public. I mean, there has been solutions by Google before, but it wasn't really open to the public in the same way. But OpenAI brought the product to the customer. And then we got the Anthropic, which was a group of former employees of OpenAI. And their moat was, according to them, that they focus on AI safety. So their large language model will be tested better and making sure that it doesn't hallucinate, etc. And then afterwards, we got Mistral, right? And what they claim is that they will have European values. So that was their mode. And most recently, xAI's Grok. I think maybe for a lack of having a real differentiation, they said, well, our large language model will be funnier and more of a rebellion. And if you think about it, I mean, I wouldn't say that none of those solutions actually have that convincing moat, right? And it's still, in a way, OpenAI who has the first mover advantage. I think it's one of the few where they have paid customers. That said, I think it has been very expensive. So it's not like they are making money out of it.
Well, I mean, OpenAI with the four Omni, the latest ChatGPT, they're actually saying that they have made quite a lot of money on mobile apps. I mean, they had the biggest spikes so far, because people actually want to pay for it, and it's like $20 a month or something. So it's quite interesting that maybe you can actually make a little bit of money out of it, but it's not in the same kind of, you know, as much money as they have spent on the development.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, but this can be plateauing, right? I mean, we don't know if that will continue. Besides, the solution that they have today is even much more expensive than the chat solution, because now we have some kind of like pictures, videos, voice, and that I presume is much more expensive to generate. So although you have increased your revenue, it doesn't mean that you have increased your profits.
No, but I must ask, what do you think going through the minds of Sequoia Capital when they first spend lots of money on OpenAI and then invest in Elon Musk's LLM?
Well, I think it's kind of a hedge. I think people still, or investors still, don't know who the winner or winners are going to be. And they believe in the people that have been starting the different companies. And yeah, again, I mean, I would probably stop investing in any company that is purely developing large language models if they do not have something that is substantially better than existing ones.
Well, Microsoft, which is obviously a big investor in OpenAI, brings us on to the next topic, which is Microsoft's new hardware, like their laptop and tablet, which they are saying will actually have advanced AI capabilities with, obviously, the OpenAI ChatGPT without any internet connection needed. I think this is quite interesting because, obviously, you know, it would have been great if we could use all these kind of services without actually being connected to the internet. But, I mean, what do you think about this? Because, obviously, they have gotten some criticism that this kind of the GPT-4o, which is locally stored on the computer, would take screenshots every few seconds. And for privacy point of view, if your company is sharing documents with you and all those kind of screenshots are taken, all those kind of very, you know, maybe important papers, it's a risk, privacy risk, I suppose.
I mean, definitely. I mean, we've already seen that there are companies that have been limited the use of ChatGPT because of privacy issues. This is probably even infinitely much worse, because if they're going to track everything that you're on a computer, then you're not even safe if you're offline. So that's definitely an issue. But I can see the Microsoft bet of doing that, because you're collecting extremely important and unique data in order to automate whatever you do on your laptop or your device. That's extremely valuable, I would say. So I fully understand this bet. Maybe they have done the math and just seen that, well, if enough people would actually opt to allow Microsoft to collect this kind of data to serve the users, that's probably enough for them to basically having the next generation of computers. But I think the future will be more than that. It's not about empowering our devices with AI today. I think we will have a completely different kind of operating systems on the computer. So basically, the computer architecture itself will be changing a lot with AI, being more like AI native, if you want to call it.
I mean, in Microsoft's defense, it should be said that you're not going to share the data with Microsoft, but it's going to be stored locally. However, who knows what's going to happen in the future. But also, I suppose that kind of sales for PCs has gone down quite dramatically the last since Apple came along. So I guess this is their next bet as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting, because Apple now is like once again seeing some or will start seeing some competition from Microsoft because of having like more AI empowered devices. So it's going to be really, really interesting. It feels like Microsoft is back in the game, but I mean, you never know. I mean, whatever happens now in the summer with Apple, they might have big announcements that, you know, it's very hard to steal consumers from Apple. Apple users, they really love the Apple products. So if they really solve this AI stuff with their devices, I think that could be enough.
Cool. And actually, being here at Epicenter kind of brings us to the next topic, because we were served pizza here. Well, we are still being served pizza. I hope everyone here can actually grab one if you want. But so it brings me to AI overview. So that's Google's search feature, which I'm sure most of you have heard something about. Because when they released this kind of new feature for summary of search results in mid-May, publicly in the US, this AI overview, well, it wasn't really reliable, right? So it has been criticized and mocked for making it that Barack Obama was a Muslim and that you can use non-toxic glue to have cheese stay on top of pizzas. I mean, I'm thinking about that. It's like, well, here at Epicenter, they didn't have a problem with that. So maybe maybe they deserve that kind of answer if you're asking the wrong questions here. But I mean, this is not the first time that Google is in trouble with its AI releases, right? So in February, it was forced to pause its chatbot Gemini, which had been criticized for being woke. And then, and Gemini's forerunner, Bard, also got off a really bad start. So, I mean, is this a problem for Google because Google is afraid that we're going to stop Googling and start GPTing instead? Or, I mean, what's happening here, do you think?
I mean, that's definitely one part of the issue. It's interesting. If you go back, when OpenAI released ChatGPT, the first thing many of us thought about is that, okay, this could be a Google search killer. And I think Google for a while resisted to do any changes because any change in their search business could actually imply dramatic decreases in their revenue. And why is that? That's because the way Google search works is that you get suggestions, and it's all based on that you click as much as possible to get exposed to as much ad as possible. But if you get the correct answer right away, you will not be clicking around. So there won't be as much, ad revenue generated. So after a while, I think Google started to realize that they need to do something. So Google has been in a very tough position. So they have seen, for instance, solutions like Perplexity, which is some kind of a search engine where you get the top five answers with references to questions that you have. So that's a lot focused on knowledge demanding questions. And Google started to see that people are actually using Perplexity instead of Google search for research. So I think that's why they have been, now the first time, taking this step of actually introducing an alternative search function, and they are very eager to get people to use it. I'm not sure if it's only Google who has this problem of hallucinations or providing, strange answers. You still see it in other large language models, but I think Google is under fire because it's such a big tech company, and it's much easier to get headlines about that, the Google large language model is not that good. To be honest, I think it's good enough compared to most of the other solutions. Yes, there are solutions that are better, but it's not like the other large language models are safer than Google. So
yeah, no, I suppose that you don't either Googling on how to get the cheese to stay on top of your pizza either. I mean, it's a weird one. But I mean, I think this is really interesting. And it's just because obviously we all use Google so much, and anything that actually makes it easier to find the results is a good thing. But I suppose as well, over time, Google's kind of AI will also get better. And so hopefully they won't be, they'd probably be able to keep at least the older generations.
Do you want to know what I think?
Yeah.
So I think that we will have different search providers, and for each field of search, you will have some kind of expertise. So you'll have some kind of, say, a company that collects data in a certain field, and they will be really experts in that data, and they can provide a language model that really can answer questions in this field better than anybody else. And we'll have many of those. So you'll have some kind of smaller expert search large language models, or maybe they're not that large either, maybe just language models. And it could be a great threat to Google. So if, I don't know, I'm not here to provide any advice to Google. They have a lot of smart people, but I would really focus on areas that generates the most ad revenue for search and being really the expert search providers in these areas, because I think it's going to be kind of hard even for a company like Google to develop all these experts in terms of language models.
Yeah. And a person that's often Googled, I'm sure, that's Scarlett Johansson, this famous actress. And she's obviously also been in the news of late because she has threatened to sue OpenAI for voice theft. And I mean, if anyone has missed it, it was a release of GPT-4 Omni, which can obviously reason across audio and vision and text and so on. And with Scarlett Johansson's voice from Her, the film Her, she was asked by Sam Altman for them to be able to use her voice, but she declined. And then when they did release, you know, Omni, and this guy voice turned up, it was very, very similar to her voice in the film Her, which also Sam Altman pointed out on Twitter. And I think this is really quite interesting because, I mean, Johansson has accused Sam Altman of deliberately copying her voice. I mean, Altman obviously would say no. But this is like a problem, obviously, because, I mean, even if Johansson would sue OpenAI and win, it kind of shows the power of this organization to actually be able to, you know, do what they like, even if they get a no from one person. And I don't know, what do you think about this kind of the gray zones? Because obviously gray zones to be innovative and to do new things, but maybe you have to still stay within some lines.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. A no is a no. It's as simple as that. Well, OpenAI says that they have modified the voice of Scarlett, so it shouldn't sound like Scarlett's. But that said, I don't know why that you have to do it if you got a clear no. I guess there's some romantic relationship to the voice and the movie itself, because, I mean, everybody who has been like a fan of AI development, they have seen the movie Her, and it's been like very close to reality. And this is exactly where we're at, right? You can't talk to the AI directly. So I think they thought it was fun and entertaining, but maybe they underestimated how important it could be for Scarlett Johansson that they should definitely not use her voice.
Yeah, I was checking some LinkedIn posts about this as well from like female tech entrepreneurs, and they were obviously like, well, that they thought it was like a casual sexualization of a tool, and you know, this is a problem and we should have like a course correction and so on. I mean, do you think this is linked, or do you think this is just a, you know, one problem that's just arised?
I mean, for sure, there's probably a lot of problems that will pop up as we see. This is, I would say, just the start. Just copying voices is going to be an extreme problem. But also like all of kind of like fake videos, for instance, deep fakes, they're going to be extremely problematic. And actually, we warned for that more than 5 years ago. But I think now people realize that this is a hard problem that might be very, very hard to counter now because the technology is far ahead.
No, true, true. With that, I would like to talk a little bit more about reasoning. One of the topics that we talk about quite a lot on AI Pod News. And it was some news that came from researchers from Google DeepMind and the University of South Carolina that had unveiled a way to boost the reasoning skills of large language models, making them less, you know, and more reliable. The new method was called like self-discover, and it was prompting, you know, it could improve the performance of like top models like OpenAI's GPT-4 and Google's Palm 2 by like 32%, especially over like chain of thought. So how it did that was by, you know, like reasoning models such as like critical thinking and step-by-step analysis to be clear, to build like clear reasoning paths similar to how humans solve problems. And we spoke, I think, last month about GFlow Nets as well that done some improvements in reasoning.
Correct.
I mean, what do you think that we are? Are we getting to the right point, or like are we doing it the right way, or what do you think?
Yeah, So why is reasoning important? Reasoning and planning, that's really, I would say, the last piece of AI to be really intelligent, at least to be able to reason as humans. So what AI can do today is that it learns patterns. Unfortunately, AI today cannot really do real addition, like adding numbers. So how does it do it? It actually memorizes that. I saw one in the audience being surprised. Yes. So it's really strange because the machine learning models, which are the basis for artificial intelligence today, they cannot learn an algorithm, a procedure. It really memorizes stuff. So all these like large language models, so many parameters, so much memory, and see context. And you see, they sound so smart, right? You know, the large language model knows so many things, can actually help you with a lot of tasks. Even that's, you know, sounds like they are doing some reasoning, but I would say that there is no real reasoning. It's the reasoning is that they could find something new that it hasn't seen before, and that we haven't really seen today. And so going back to Mimi's question about this current research, if you start speaking about accuracy, that, sometimes this reasoning algorithm has such high accuracy, but sometimes lower, I would say there's no reasoning at all. Either it really knows how to reason to things or it doesn't. Math is a great benchmark because you know that 10 plus 10 is 20. There is no room for interpretation.
Well, maybe you remember that, don't
you? Yeah. So, and we know very well that we don't have such AI algorithms today that can really learn how to do that. And this topic is really interesting. I mean, there are two groups of people. Ones who believe that you just throw data at the AI algorithms today and they will be able to reason eventually. There is another group that believes that we need to do something new. We need to introduce something new, some new architecture at least. Perhaps the pieces are there. It just, we need to know how to put things together from architecture point of view.
So what you're really saying is that all this kind of research into making it more reasonable, it's actually kind of useless, because if we don't do it in a different way, we're not going to actually have the accuracy for 100%.
I mean, being more accurate, that's always great. We are using it today, so I'm not saying no to that. Whether it's really development in terms of reasoning, I have some doubts.
Some people, like for maybe 6 months ago, were saying that the hallucinations that the LLMs are doing was actually part of its possible, you know, how it could actually work the way it did, that you needed to have a small part of hallucinations almost, you know, do its job. It's nothing, that's not true.
Actually, I heard this reasoning from many researchers. Actually, one of them was Sam Altman himself, expressing hallucination as more of maybe a feature rather than a bug. To give you some comparison, it's like a creative person that, say, a painter, you know, doing many sketches till that person arrives at the, you know, this beautiful painting. Maybe hallucination is something like that, you know, having the large language model spitting out a lot of strange things until it gives you something meaningful. Perhaps, interesting thought, but I would say still like something that we need to do something about. It's probably there are other ways to generate creative ideas than providing like gibberish output.
So this is like my research piece that I brought up, but you obviously sitting there reading papers on AI development all the time. I mean, have you found anything of late that you think has been like super interesting or a little bit interesting?
No, absolutely. I mean, talking about new architectures, so Joshua Benju, who is one of the godfathers of deep learning, like the main algorithm used for all this we see, like developments, large language models, or autonomous driving, etc. He has, and his group, developed some kind of new tool called GFlow Nets, and that's for reasoning purposes. They recently published research paper. Actually, the lead author is Edward Hu, who was our guest in January in the iPod then. Formerly employee at Microsoft and OpenAI, now he is starting his own startup. And it's some kind of promising tool, but in their paper, they still talk about accuracy. So it's not, first, it cannot do arithmetic like addition perfectly yet. So there's still a way to go. But I think this is one of the research areas that I really follow up very closely. There is another research area, which is efficient tools to train these machine learning models. And it's based on research from Mert Pilansi from Stanford, who was also one of our guests in iPod then. And I would recommend to listen to this episode. And there are a lot of developments that are happening. It basically could help us to spend much, much less energy to train AI models than we are doing today. I mean, there was an article recently about how Microsoft, their bet on AI could be actually catastrophic for environment because there is such a huge energy consumption to train these AI models. So I think we really need to rethink how to do that from an environmental perspective. And that direction of focus on efficiency, I think is going to be the next wave. Right now, we are so occupied, you know, with developing all these new AI algorithms where we see stuff that we haven't seen before. But then at the end of the day, we will, I think, stop and start to think smaller. How can we do this much more efficiently?
Yeah. I mean, since climate tech is on par almost with the AI, you know, hype, I obviously, you know, that should probably be next.
Definitely.
Great. This has been fun. We've gone through quite a lot of different things today, and I'm really looking forward to see what's happening, you know, next month, because obviously we can't, well, we probably have these really large investments just going on. And as Elon Musk wrote on Twitter, more news to follow on the XAI. So who knows, we might bring that up next time we see each other.
Definitely. I mean, it has been great pleasure to have this live recording of AIPodden together with you, Mimi, and together with the audience. And we hope that you all stay for a couple of drinks and some pizza. And please feel free to grab us and chat if you have any questions, if you want to discuss anything. We're going to be around here for a while. And I hope that you continue listening to AIPodden and hope to see you again.